Good day, and welcome to today's Strategies to Reduce Avoidable Acute Care Hospitalizations, Phone Monitoring, and Front-Loading Visits conference call. This call is being recorded. At this time, I would like to turn the call over to Ms. Vicky Agramonte. Please go ahead, ma'am.
Thank you, James. Good morning, everyone. Welcome to today's presentation. We really appreciate you joining us in the early morning conference call, which is part of our educational series on a monthly basis to support your implementation of the HHQI National Campaign Best Practice Intervention Packages. And today's topic area is going to focus on phone monitoring and front-loading visits. And this is actually going to be part of a three-month series, and I'm going to talk more about that once we get underway. But we've kind of tried to modify these next three-month intervention packages for you guys, knowing how taxing the summer season can be on your staffing. And certainly we know that your supervisors and management staff could be out there in the field as well. So we try to modify this to meet your needs. Those of you who are registered for today's conference call, will forward a copy of this presentation along with the program evaluation form, which, again, we're going to strongly encourage that you fill out. And just as an FYI, many of you last month gave us feedback on the use of the screenshots in our presentation slides and how hard they are to make out. So for this month, what we did was we sent it as an additional attachment, so you'd be able to see up close the screenshots that were utilized at the end of the presentation. And again, it's just to give you ideas on how to best utilize this intervention package. So again, if you did not receive this presentation, you can go on to www.ipro.org and go to the Professionals tab, click on Home Health Agencies, and then click on the Home Health Quality Initiative. And you can scroll down to the upcoming events section, and you will probably see the link for today's presentation right up top. And as James said, as a reminder, this session is being recorded, and it's going to be posted to that same section of the Home Health section of the iPro website. Great. Okay, so let's get started. I'm going to start on slide two. And again, as always, our New York State Local Area Network of Excellence, our LANE, is a collaboration amongst all the home care associations and of course iPro, and their support in this initiative has been relentless. So we cannot thank them enough, and just to give them credit, from the Continuing Care Leadership Coalition, we've been working with Kelly Donahue, from Haney's, Rose Duhane, from HCA, of course, Lexi Silver, and from the New York State Association of Healthcare Providers, Margaret Clark. And again, this is not just in name. This group of associations have been relentless in their assistance with our initiatives and assistance with you participating in it. So we can't thank them enough, and certainly you should thank them when you have a chance as well. So I'm turning on to slide three. I'm going to look at our objectives for today, and we're going to be providing an overview of phone monitoring and front-loading visit intervention package material, and hopefully to demonstrate the value of the structural clinical intervention of phone monitoring and front-loading, and identify how phone monitoring and front-loading can be implemented and used effectively, and to provide an overview of tools that support the strategy. Okay, turning on to slide number four. Again, we're looking at what they're calling the Simply Summer Series. For this month, of course, is phone monitoring and front-loading. For July, it'll be teletriage. And for August, telemonitoring. And, of course, it goes without saying, once you understand what packages are coming up in the next months, why we've packaged these together. For the month of July and August, our kiosk, our head QIO, has informed us that the packages will be a little lighter. There's not going to be as much information. Of course, once we get through this month's package, you know, a lot of the information from here on in for these strategies will be redundant. And I'm sure for those of you who have been on the campaign from the beginning have started to see the similarity from month to month. And that was the whole goal, to not be overwhelmed with the size of these packages by gaining some familiarity with them every month. So we hope that that's come to be, although we have heard from many of you that you're using the fast track, which is great. So again, these monthly educational conference calls are designed for you to see an overview of the whole package to maybe pick and choose what you'd like to use. Going on to the next slide, on slide five, and why would we combine these two strategies? Again, there's a natural relationship between them. We know there's proof that this strategy, along with the use of a risk assessment and emergency care planning, will reduce your ACH rate. And it's an effective strategy that can be incorporated into your risk assessment as one of the interventions. If you remember back in March and April during our conferences, Sarah had told you guys that there were some packages that you can't compromise. You really, really should consider the use of a risk assessment tool. If you can't identify who is at risk, you can intervene. The use of the emergency care planning came naturally right after the risk assessment. Your patients need to know what to do and when to call you or call their physician or, of course, 911. So, again, you know, these were, you know, strategies that laid the foundation for you. This strategy of phone monitoring and front loading is an aggressive intervention that will require leadership buy-in and require some planning. But again, it can be used in and of itself as the one strategy that can reduce your ACH rate. So if you really haven't moved further into your plan of action, or you're just getting started with a lot of this information, this may be a good strategy to begin with and to stay with for some time to really, you know, get it right in your agency, because it would involve many different departments to get this done and done right. So you've laid a solid foundation that's going to last for years to come. And also, just to mention also, and I'm not sure if any of you, I'm sure there's REACH agencies on the line, this best practice intervention package was kind of done with the idea of Joanne Rogers' research study that was done on front-loading visits with congestive heart failure patients and diabetic patients. This research has gotten a lot of attention, and it should. This is home care nursing research at its finest. So what I've done at the end of this presentation, knowing how overwhelming the MedQuick.org website can be, is I provided you with direct URL links to access this this presentation, the research paper, and the audio that Joanne did, not only for the REACH agencies during the learning session back last year in June of 2006, but what she did then for our national calls. So, again, to get a good idea on how one agency implemented this strategy effectively may just give you the basis of what you need to get this going in your agency. So it's a very exciting research study. And, again, I'm going to elaborate more on it as we go on, because I do think that it's laid the foundation for those of us who like to do research to do further research. She's built it for us. And there were gaps in her research and limitations that she certainly well documented very well, which leaves an opportunity for everyone else here on the line to maybe take advantage of engaging in some research in the future. Well, I'm going to go into that more as we go on. Okay, let's move on to slide 6. I thought it was important for your staff, and this was one of the pages in the best practice intervention package, to really keep in tune with how a home health episode should progress. I think our staff needs to be reminded consistently and how a home care episode should, in the best scenario, move forward. I think our staff is can be overwhelmed with family dynamics, psychosocial issues, and a whole slew of other things that we've all dealt with as home care nurses. So it's really important to always remind them how it should be. This is the way it should be. It's not only, you know, we shouldn't always have bumps in the road. We should be able to, you know, to open up a case with a patient, that the clinicians instruct and train the patient and caregiver. And they're going to step back, and they're going to watch and spot the patient and caregiver engaging in their own care and becoming more and more involved in their self-management. Then we're going to watch the patient and caregiver become independent, and the patient's going to be ultimately discharged. It gives a nice steps and blocks for the nurses and clinicians to really see how the home health episode should progress. Moving on to slide 7, again, our goal is promoting the patient's self-management. So the whole concept behind this strategy of front-loading and is to be able to have intensive teaching and coaching at the beginning of the episode of care. And, of course, we need to start with informing the patient of their high-risk status. I think those of us that have been doing this for the last couple of years know that it took everything to just change our clinicians' behavior to be able to engage in this type of quality initiative of reducing our acute care hospitalization rate. But now this is a strategy that truly engages the patient and the caregiver, and not the clinician, but the patient and the caregiver, which was all our goals. That is exactly what we wanted to happen. So think about that, too, when you're planning on using this package or not. So we're starting with informing the patient and the caregiver of their high-risk status at the start of care. And, of course, some of the other strategies that are going to be used is the emerging care planning, their disease management, and that type of teaching, self-monitoring and the reporting of the symptomatology, and their follow-up with provider appointments. So just a few things that kind of get us going at the beginning. And actually, just as a side note, I've spoken with a few providers in the last weeks that are trying to implement front-loading and have admitted openly, and I'm glad that they do because we need to do this more often, that they really don't feel that they're implementing front-loading as well as they could be. It's pretty much just a name. We're saying we front-load. And that's an important point to make. Are we really front-loading visits and using phone monitoring in a way that's structured and that can be used to, you know, for a tight, coordinated patient care episode? And, I really appreciate that level of honesty because I think what we don't admit enough is that it's okay for some of the strategies that we try in quality improvement not to work. It's okay. And it's okay to be able to say 3 months later, you know what, this just isn't working as we planned. Either let's sit at the table and see if we can modify it, or let's move on to another strategy that might be more likely to work. Having that flexibility and that openness of conversations is what's going to make your quality improvement initiative work. We will never get it right the first time, nor should we ever be required to. This is a work in progress. Okay, so I broke it down for us. I'm moving on to slide 8. I broke it down. Let's just look at front-loading for a moment because I think the two strategies in and of themselves require some explanation. And we're looking now at slide 9. Where we're defining front-loading, just to give us some clarity. You want to provide more visits early in the episode with the expectation that the more frequent visits will not only increase symptom surveillance, but also promote more intensive patient teaching. So, again, that's the goal, okay? And it's important because we know that in the past there's been some confusion that front-loading means providing more visits at a time when we're trying to improve service utilization. So this is an important distinction. And moving on to slide 10 clarifies that. You know, you want to consider, for front-loading visits, you want to consider structuring a protocol to provide the majority of planned visits by all disciplines within the first 3 weeks of care. It does not mean more visits. And what I used at the end of this presentation was a calendar to illustrate how this can work. So we'll talk about that more. It actually will improve your service utilization by disciplines. Schedule visits sooner or postpone the visits based on the patient's progress or problems, and that you actually should see a decrease in your length of stay. If you've been engaging in front-loading visits as part of your ACH strategy and you're not seeing these issues come up the way they should, you might really want to take a peek at what's going on. Is it really working the way front-loading should be working? Just think and how wonderful it would be to open up a patient care episode on a Sunday and have nursing go back on Monday, coordinate with therapies to go in on alternate days so we're not overwhelming a patient, to have the home health aide as part of this team, to case conference by Wednesday. Again, you know, this is that structured type of coordinated care that we all want to do, and sometimes, you know, when we're dealing with a volume of patients, sometimes these things don't get coordinated as well as they could, and we've all openly admitted that, and I think that's where home care has had our opportunity to improve the way we provide care. Okay, guys, moving on to 11, just to remind us why any of these strategies are important, but most certainly why front-loading and full monitoring are important. And this is our OASIS data from calendar year 2003. This is a familiar slide to you all. IPRO has used this in several presentations. But this is saying what happens to our acute care hospitalization rates, or the rate of hospitalization within this length of time. So we have a home health length of stay that's 1 week. 25.44% of these patients are being hospitalized within 7 days. Within 2 weeks, 44.65% of these patients are hospitalized. And within 3 weeks, over 57% could be hospitalized. Of course, this is your high-risk population that requires a different amount of intervention. These are real data. This is real statistics. We know this for a fact. We know that our patients are very vulnerable during those first few weeks post-hospitalization and require more intensive case management. So we're moving on to slide 12 and looking at effective front loading, and it requires the continuity of care from staff who provides the care from any discipline. Again, to have in the first 3 weeks of care to your high-risk patient, to have three or four different clinicians seeing that patient, you're going to lose that opportunity of continuity where you're going to get to know a patient and know where they're at in their episode and in their teaching and in their, you know, ability to self-manage. So although we know how hard that can be, my God, I do know, trust me, I do know continuity of care is paramount for your high-risk patients. To have intense care coordination amongst these services, to have the discipline speak consistently. And we know most of them do all the time. Of course, the challenge is getting them to document it. Believe me, those provider days are not too far back where I don't remember these things. To have interdisciplinary teamwork that includes the home health aide. Again, you have a home health aide providing 3 days a week services to a patient. You're visiting 2 to 3 times a week. You have physical therapy or occupational therapies or other therapies visiting on other days. You've essentially covered this patient for daily visits and improved your service utilization. So if they all coordinate together, what you have is very intense coverage for a patient who's high risk for rehospitalization. And we'll talk about that more. Please write down some of your questions also so we can engage in some good conversation after this conference. Okay, moving on to slide number 13, and what population should be considered for front loading? Of course, your patients who are assessed at high risk and or have a high level of acuity at the start of care or resumption of care. And also, your disease-specific populations, your CHFers, your COPDers, your diabetics, your AIDS patients. This group of patients do have a higher risk. Also, you know, when you deal with a high level of acuity, you have patients who just are going to require a lot of your time, and it does not have to be done by the clinician who's coordinating or who is the case manager. It can be done by all the disciplines together as a team. Okay. So we're going to move on to slide 14, and we're looking at front-loading structure. And you really, if you want to look at what you already do right now, it's always the best place to start. Again, front-loading is not new to those of us who have been in home care for a while. We've been doing it for a while. Actually, we were on a REACH call a couple of weeks back, and a hospital-based child from another state had been providing the conference that day and said that, you know, in their conversation and engaging the hospital staff in what they do in home care, the hospital nurses turned around and said, you know what? We've been front-loading forever. Again, in a hospital, you're triaging your patients. Who needs what and when? Who needs to be checked every 5 minutes? Same concept in home care. Who needs what and when is, again, what we should be doing routinely and triaging our patients' needs consistently. So think of front-loading that way. When your staff wants to know, they've been doing this all along, but we just need to, you know, find a way to structure it so you can prove its, you know, its utility in home care and that it's a strategy that actually works well. So you want to examine your current agency policy and consider, you know, different ways you can do this. So I just wanted to give you some examples. You want to consider a minimum number of weekly contacts for the first 2 to 3 weeks. A lot of you have done that, and actually a lot of you have had a lot of success in that. To say, you know, that the patient who is at high risk will have a minimum of 4 contacts per week, whether that be phone monitoring or with an actual visit. And that's for that nursing discipline alone. Again, if you structure it this way, I think if we think about how overwhelming home care is to our new nurses or nurses who are new to home care, just thinking how you would appreciate having this level of structure, if you were new to home care. And I think a lot of us take for granted we've been grandfathered into many changes in home care. Being a new nurse or new to home care, you know, it's really hard to fathom how any one person can take in everything that we expect of them. And certainly, as I said, you want to develop a protocol that builds a structure for visit frequency and case conferencing. That really should be part of the plan. Benefits, I think we've really looked through this. We're on slide 15. It provides you an opportunity for validating the initial assessment, thinking of the utility of that. including the risk assessment. If you've had two different staff members or you had a start of care done over a weekend, you know, it's important. Let's get in there quick and validate these findings. Make sure that everything down there is exactly what the patient needs on your start of care assessment. And then this way there won't be that gap from a weekend to a weekday, if that's what you deal with having separate staff perform your weekend and weekday visits. Also, it's going to provide an opportunity for ongoing education. It supports improved service utilization, as we've said. What Joanne Rogers saw in her study was improved patient satisfaction. Again, we need to develop trust with our patients. They need to know that when they call us, or that when we call them, that we're really engaged in what they need and that they trust us to call us first before they call 911. And again, it could be used as a marketing tool. You know, what this best practice intervention package did was pretty much look at the physician perspective again, and physicians will be more likely to refer if they know these different strategies are being utilized, you know, to really watch their patients well. So again, it's really exciting stuff. Okay. Well, slide 16, just kind of we're going to look at phone monitoring and just kind of separate that out. We have some good stuff here. And let's look at defining phone monitoring. And this is a scheduled remote care delivery or monitoring in which scheduled patient encounters via the telephone occur between a health provider, a patient, and a caregiver. Okay, a little different. You know, remember CMS looks at telehealth or telemonitoring as the big umbrella that includes phone monitoring. Okay, we know not everyone has a telehealth program at this point. And having phone monitoring is a nice way to supplement that. You're really keeping an eye on a patient, but having them self-monitor or have the ability to self-monitor by taking vital signs and weights, reporting that during phone monitoring visits. And we're going to talk more about that now. But again, this is a wonderful opportunity to supplement if you're waiting for your telehealth program to, you know, an opportunity to implement a telehealth program. Okay, so moving on to slide number 18, and what population should be considered for phone monitoring. Again, this is something that your leadership needs to decide at the table. But again, you want to consider that your patient who are assessed at high risk. Patients with a history of non-adherence would be a good candidate for phone monitoring. And many of you have talked to us about that and how it really helped to improve adherence in patients and to get to the bottom of why they're not adherent, which certainly has got to be our goal. We cannot just label people and move them forward. We'll find a way to really get to the bottom of it and help them. Patients who exhibit a high degree of anxiety related to their care. Now, you know who this patient is. This is the patient that calls you day and night. What I used to do also as a home care nurse is I'd provide a time in which I'd call that patient and say, listen, I can't return your four phone calls every day, but I will call you by noontime on such and such a date, and a date. And believe me, it does relieve anxiety. I think, you know, and knowing how this works, I do know how a high anxiety patient can be very time consuming. But I think to remember that this is anxiety related. A patient would not pick up the phone to a home care agency 20 times in a day if they weren't worried about something and needed some level of reassurance. The strategy of phone monitoring can be used to put them at ease. And then, of course, you need to follow up. If you said you're going to do something at a specific date and time, then, of course, it has to be done in order to gain that trust. And, again, other populations that should be considered are disease-specific populations, like we had just said. Patients who don't meet the inclusion criteria to telehealth. Interesting to think of it this way. You know, we all have criteria of whom would be most appropriate for telehealth, and usually some type of environmental characteristic. Okay, I'm trying to find a nice way to say that. Patients that don't have an environment conducive with leaving a piece of equipment in might be good candidates for phone monitoring. It would be a good opportunity to keep a sharp eye on them. Even though we couldn't leave our equipment in their home with them. And it may not only be environmental. It could be, you know, with family members who are drug abusers or, you know, have a history of theft and, you know, someplace where we can't trust equipment to be left. So it does leave another opportunity to capture this patient population with phone monitoring. If you have an overflow, if you have a waiting list, which we all hope you do, have a waiting list for the use of your telehealth monitors, this might be a good way to keep a sharp eye on these patients, you know, prior to their monitor being put in. and patients that are monitored under telehealth, which most of you who are doing implementing telehealth know that patient is alerting. You need to call that patient. You know, are we really taking the full credit for those phone calls, and are we asking the right questions? So again, this strategy may help to really refine that or to even improve it. Or, you know, you may find that yours is working just fine, which is great too. But these are good strategies and good populations to consider using the strategy for. Okay, moving on to slide number 19, the benefits. Again, you know, we're pretty much the same benefits that we were looking at prior. We're looking at a frequent communication with our high-risk patients. Again, increasing your patient caregiver trust in your response. Reinforce your emergency care planning with each encounter. It's vital. We know, and I'm sure a lot of you have told us, that in order to ensure that the patients are being told the emergency care plan that you've implemented, you're calling to follow up. You're calling the patient a couple of days after the start of care to make sure that they know what to do in the event of an emergency. Now, I guarantee what you're finding is the patient saying, well, I don't know what you're talking about. Yeah, maybe the nurse said that. Of course they're going to say that. They're completely overwhelmed with what we have to do in the first days of care and home care. But just think of it. You know, we need to reinforce days after the start of care, the information that was provided on that first day, in order for the patient to absorb it and use it the way we were hoping to use it. So don't think of it. Look at it as an opportunity. You're on the phone. You want to reinforce that information with them and then document that so we'll be able to prove it in the end that the strategy actually works. Of course, it's going to give you the opportunity to intervene when the early signs of decline are identified. So again, you know, looking to manage your resources effectively. And again, using it as a marketing tool for your referral sources. Moving on to slide 20. Again, how you're going to select these patients. When you look at phone monitoring, different from front loading, the patient needs to have the ability to access a phone. Not only the ability, of course, but the ability to communicate and hear on the phone. So we all know how taxing it is while our clinicians are calling in the morning to prepare visits for the day for the patient who is hard of hearing. The whole office knows exactly what happened on that phone call. So ensuring that privacy during phone monitoring is a vital leadership role. If you're asking questions as opposed to setting up or arranging a time of visit, that really should be done with some level of confidence and having some confidentiality of the patient maintained. So consider that while you're, you know, planning your intervention. The patient's willingness to accept phone monitoring as a clinical intervention. You know, there are patients who just don't want to be bothered by phone. Certainly you need to weed those patients out to not waste your resources on that. You know, and you can think of other ways that you can help that patient. But the patient really needs to be fully engaged in this. And again, at the start of care, just like we do with the risk assessment, we need to inform them of this, that, you know, based on their risk factors for rehospitalization, that we really think that a strategy of phone monitoring may work. Get their buy-in. The patient and caregiver buy-in. You've now got yourself a perfect scenario for having the strategy really play out and work in the end for the clinician. And does the patient or the family have the ability to self-monitor? You know, again, these are variables that must be taken into consideration to not overutilize resources in places where you don't need to do that right now. Okay, moving on. Talked about a little of this on slide 21 and some leadership considerations. Excuse me. You have to think, and I know you've already thought this out, most of you, that implementing phone monitoring is going to impact other areas of practice. And scheduling is a big one. You have to consider, and many agencies have already done this, considered adjusting the clinician's productivity to meet this need. If the clinician self-schedules, the clinician really needs to put these phone monitoring interventions on their schedule, okay, because it's actually a visit that's being conducted by phone. That could take anywhere from 15 to 20 minutes and then possibly time to document. So depending on how you arrange this and how you, you know, set this up to work for your agency, these are just things you may want to take into consideration. If you have scheduling, the scheduler needs to be involved in the initial planning of the strategy, and they need to understand the importance of it, different from the two-minute phone call to arrange a visit. This is actually conducting an assessment by phone and then documenting. So everyone needs to be on board. Just some things to kind of take into consideration. Moving on to slide 22, again, elaborates on some leadership considerations of your documentation guidelines. Now, what I did purposely in this presentation is the best practicing intervention package provided us with a completed sheet that was documentation to, you know, to document the nurse's or clinician's phone call to the patient. And I thought if I provided you with that, I would probably need a bulletproof vest because I can hear you all right now loading your weapons to shoot at iPro. But again, we don't want to recreate the wheel. Our clinicians have enough documentation to get done during the course of the day. Getting them to complete that is hard enough. You really want to take a peek at what you're already using for your coordination notes or for your phone monitoring notes to maybe simply use one of your skilled visit sheets that has every question that needs to be asked to a patient. You know, again, just be careful. I put some of the examples that weren't filled out because it was an elaborate note that they put in the package. I put some blanks in the back of this presentation just to give you an idea of what other people may be using. Certainly here, you know, our home health team does not support using additional documentation. We've all been there, done that, so we wouldn't do it to you. And certainly your clinicians wouldn't appreciate it either. And also what we've known a lot of agencies have done, and actually a lot of agencies that we've showcased on our calls, is that they've structured phone monitoring with script. And it develops some continuity of the task. We'll talk, too, about other disciplines that became involved in phone monitoring. We have many agencies who have piloted the use of medical social workers providing this phone monitoring. Again, the clinical medical social worker, their clinical utility is underutilized in home care, and they're not simply to help fill out a Medicaid application. But these are clinicians at heart and can certainly know when there's a problem and when that problem needs to be dealt with by somebody besides them. So consider, think outside the box. Don't just think nursing. Think other disciplines who have this ability as well. Other leadership considerations is to determine the need for physician orders. The reason I mentioned this was because it was mentioned in the best practice intervention package. It's certainly something that just needs to be discussed. Nothing that I personally feel needs physician orders. And, of course, like I said, you need to ensure the patient's confidentiality during your phone monitoring encounters with them. And perfect segue into our next slide, which is slide number 23, and who should conduct the phone monitoring. It could be anybody. Just think, you know, the last thing your clinicians want to hear is you telling them that they need to do one more thing. I do recall how taxing that can be as a clinician and as a supervisor. So it could be any of your in-house staff members. It could be team facilitators, team leaders, supervisors, your intake staff, your hospital or discharge liaison, or you can use your telehealth nurse, your triage unit, your medical social workers, or any other clinical disciplines. And we know that some agencies have actually used volunteers. So it depends on to what, you know, level will you, perform a structured encounter during phone monitoring where, you can use these disciplines and other members of your team to help with this. Providing a protocol is paramount. We really need to develop protocol to help our clinicians. And like I said, the young, new clinicians who don't know this off the top of their head, protocol will help them carry out this task. And what I did was provide you with the sample that was provided to us in the best practice intervention package. And it does give just some basic, ideas for you to take into consideration while you're building your protocol. Okay, moving on. We're on slide 25. The benefits of phone monitoring and front-loading visits together, again, is using it based on the patient's risk factors to supplement visits with phone calls or vice versa, reduce length of stay, and, again, the patient satisfaction. Moving on to slide number 26. And some of the other benefits is to improve and strengthen your survey results with the Department of Health. When you look at the strategy that really puts together the state regulations and the conditions of participation, it's front-loading and phone monitoring. It shows that level of coordination that's expected of us as clinicians in home care. So to just keep that in mind as you're considering the use of the strategy, that this is actually something that will strengthen your survey results, as every quality initiative should. Okay, you're looking at improving your care coordination, supporting the clinicians by structuring this level of visits based on the patient's risk factors and diagnoses, providing clinical guidance for that visit. You're not just telling them to make the visit. We heard from many providers that when they told their clinicians to front load, by the second or third visit, the clinician actually didn't know what to do on the visits. Now think about it. If the clinician didn't buy into this idea, and I'm telling them, they better go back and visit that patient at least twice this week. They've already convinced themselves that the patient didn't require that level of intervention. You need your staff's buy-in for this in order for it to be effective, and also to provide them with the clinical guidance they need to perform the visit. Give them that list. You're going to promote their self-management by teaching them their disease, medications. Go right down the list with them. Some clinicians require that level of guidance. Not all do. Of course, some do. And to have consistent documentation and interventions for your high-risk patients. So just think, you know, when the Department of Health surveys you, you can actually say this is your protocol for dealing with your high-risk individual patients. Okay, moving on to 27, slide number 27, and implementation. Just want to make sure that we're utilizing these reports. I think that you have all seen the benefit of the HHQI campaign reports that you receive from us monthly along with your iProTrend reports. Many of you have already said to me, and many of the home health members, the members of the home health team, that you're reviewing this data to assess the specific day of the week that that hospitalizations are occurring. I think as much as we've seen this information on a daily basis, to see it and trend it in the way this report has provided us is an eye-opener to see that, my gosh, what happened? 40% of our patients are being hospitalized on a Wednesday. It's real great food for thought. You know, to say, well, let's give these patients a call on Tuesday and see, you know, or Monday and see what's going on. So, again, these reports have really given us an opportunity to dig a little deeper and to see more than we have, you know, than what we see right now. Again, this best practice intervention tool, as every month does, supports all other disciplines in home care. And MSW and Home Health Aid tracks, particularly this month, I was very interested in. I thought they were wonderful. And for the medical social worker to be able to focus on interventions within their realm, to assist with financial, cognitive issues, issues of non-adherence, and issues that exacerbate anxiety. So, again, this is a wonderful intervention. Our home health aid, we already talked of the utility of home health aid in our high-risk population. The aid needs to be instructed on what needs to be reported and when, and that they are part of this team. And the aid needs to know this patient's high risk. Okay, it's something they know intuitively, but being part of a team is something they can really engage in. For the first time this month, this therapy track has introduced a certificate of attendance for the use of this package, so you might want to check that out. It was new this month. The therapy track was designed to promote coordination with the other disciplines, and it defines the role of the therapist during the first week of care. And again, that helps to kind of smooth out that this is a team effort. It's not a nursing case that therapy goes and makes a visit on. We're in this together. It's a team effort. And again, having now a certificate of attendance, you would really need to check your state and national associations to ensure that your therapist can benefit from that. Okay, moving on to slide 30. Looking at the managed care connection, again, for every other intervention package will have the same component, but for front loading and phone monitoring, there's nothing more important than having a discussion on how you handle your managed care patients who are high risk. Again, that should not be an automatic, we can't provide, we can't do. Again, to be able to sit your clinicians down and say, hold it, what do we expect of them in their reporting to a managed care company? And should we include the patient's risk factors, their strategies to front load and to phone monitor? And would that strengthen your ability to obtain the necessary authorization? I lost that word for a second. The necessary authorization to continue visiting that patient until they're ready to be discharged. Okay, page 31 is just, we're going over now, just some other benefits of this month's best practice intervention package, and looking at the hospital connection. It's important to engage your referral sources into your acute care hospitalization plan of action. We'll go through these pretty quickly, but I want to have some time for questions. The nursing post-test questions, I thought they were particularly brilliant, and thought it would be great to have these questions as part of your competency to ensure that your nurses understand that you're not saying go back to providing daily or BID visits to patients. That's not what we're saying. You know, how do you improve service utilization by just tightening your coordination efforts? So I thought the nursing post-test questions really, you know, spoke to that very nicely. Okay. And these were the handouts I told you I posted as a separate handout for you guys so you can see them. I have to tell you, the staff education tool on the phone monitoring assessment guides for the diseases that were posted in this month's package, I think were just wonderful. Certainly something you want to take a look at to make sure that your assessment documentation includes some of this. Or if you're looking to change, certainly these are documents that are readily available to you to modify and use to your liking. What I thought was particularly exciting about this month's intervention package was that the staff education of the phone monitoring assessment guide and some of the other support documentation that was released as part of the home telehealth disease management series go hand in hand. And I think this was a wonderful way to explain to the providers that we're not just developing these tools one to overlap the other. All these tools were designed to be utilized together at different time points to ease in your staff's orientation to them. They go hand in hand. So what I wanted to just make sure you saw and illustrate that the use of the decision support tool in heart failure and the use of the phone monitoring assessment guide can go hand in hand for your staff. So it gives them the questions to ask for the assessment, gives them the interventions to engage in once they have the answers to those assessment questions. So it certainly does support their clinical need for education. So I thought that was very exciting. Also, again, I just given you examples of the same tools for COPD, and they had them for several different diseases. This was one of the blank documentation forms I was telling you guys about earlier, and this was what one agency had done. It's very simple. It's a narrative form, and there were several of these little boxes right up top, and that it just indicates that this was a telephone call. So this was a nice, simple one. It was actually part of our home telehealth reference from 2005. And again, I provided you with these direct URL links at the back of the presentation in order for you to access them quickly. Again, from the Home Telehealth Reference, 2005, this is a patient encounter form that's more of a checklist that includes more symptom surveillance. So these are just other examples that are already available to you, just to make sure you can kind of piece that together. On slide number 40, we're looking at phone monitoring front-loading checklist for clinicians. I love this tool. I think it's important that our clinicians get as much, quick look at a checklist. What do I have to do? Tell me what I have to do. Remind me of how I have to do it. Okay? I'd appreciate that as a clinician, and I'm sure your clinicians would appreciate it as well. I told you in the beginning of the presentation we wanted to look at scenarios with and without front loading. I think I'm preaching to the choir here. You guys certainly know the benefits of front loading, and there's so many variables that interfere with our ability to get that done. But I just thought if you can see it in calendar form, and I know we have other providers on the line who have used the concept of a calendar to illustrate their point to their clinicians and to others during presentations. This is the visual. The clinician can't argue with a visual calendar. So it's important you can use this also as part of the event tree to kind of look at when you're looking in case conferencing with your clinicians to say, okay, well, here's what happened. Now, look at if we did it this way. And look at what happens when you coordinate this tightly. So let's take a peek at that. We're on slide 42. And we're looking again at a start of care that's conducted on a weekend because I think that illustrates our point beautifully. And then to have this in the first week of care, skill nursing, team meeting, the revisit, the home health aid intro, PT eval, and we're not going to go through the whole month. Certainly you can understand the concept. To have the PT revisit, and then now going into a weekend. For the first 18 days of care, you've essentially covered this patient for daily visits and properly utilized your services. So this is how, you know, a scenario where front loading and phone monitoring are used effectively. And, of course, to converse that, we have to show what it would look like in the other way is on slide 43 without front loading. Now, guys, this is a common scenario. We know how things go in home care. Patient is opened up by nursing on a Saturday. The nurse, rightfully so, was told by the family they are fine. They have what they need. It's no problem. Well, we knew in our heart this patient was high risk, but we felt a little better leaving them because the family was there with them. That weekend staff reports off to the case manager or the coordinator, and that coordinator was kind of got the hint that the patient was okay. You know what? The patients aren't okay. Our patients convince us of things, and we can even attribute that to our own families and our parents. They're fine, they're fine. I'm having chest pain, but I'm fine. No, they're not fine. They really need to have some strict guidance, where if this weekend nurse had been following a risk assessment and told that if this patient is high risk, these certain interventions need to take place, then the nurse can say, I know you're fine, but this is what we're seeing. I'm worried that this can happen with or without your family here, and really use that as the in to get into the patient to say, please let us help you, keep you at home. Okay, so now this report off to the case manager on a Monday resulted in a visit that was not made until Wednesday to, of course, find that the patient was hospitalized. This is not an uncommon scenario. In fact, this is quite a common scenario in home care and one that the strategy can really help to overcome. I'd love to hear some of your feedback on that. Okay, as promised, this is page 44, where I provided you your web links, resources, and references. Again, you know, I didn't get into it's 10 to 10. You know, I just want to leave a moment to talk more about Joanne Rogers' research and some opportunity for you guys to really engage in some of that research. And, again, you'll see why the New York Heart Association CHF classification becomes vital when you look at Joanne's work. It's a brilliant research study. Where do we go from here? Next steps. Your leadership needs to determine the need to add this strategy. Okay, you're going to need everyone's support to do this. You need to develop policy and protocols. You need to choose a patient population. I know you're tired of hearing us say this, but you really, really need to trial this on a small population, okay, primarily a small population of patients. This is something that's going to need modification. So there's going to be a tremendous amount of trial and error of what's going to work with whom. So you need to give yourself that, you know, that latitude to make those mistakes and learn from them. And, of course, you want to analyze your results, modify, and then spread to a larger group, okay? Measurement of success. And again, I know you're tired of hearing us say this as well, but you need to analyze your data. Okay, it's one thing to collect your data. It's another not to recognize that things aren't going in the direction in which you need them to go in. So consider this. We've just introduced the telehealth data collection tool. Agencies had given us feedback that using this tool for phone monitoring alone is a large task. And it is. It's a lot of information that can be provided for phone monitoring as opposed to using it for your telehealth program. But now consider how valuable it would be to be able to really be serious about implementing this strategy, to get your baseline data of what your agency, how your agency is performing right now in the absence of the strategy, and then on a monthly basis be able, or even daily or weekly, enter data from your phone monitoring encounters with patients to prove at the end of the strategy, in maybe 3-4 months, to be able to say, was this strategy effective? It's what Joanne Rogers did with her research. It starts out with a small idea where then it blossoms into a new research study. Again, Joanne, you know, admitted in her research that the interventions weren't, for the group that she chose, the interventions weren't as effective for the diabetic group that they chose. There's your opportunity to build on research that's already been conducted in home care by nursing. So, again, I'm always going to encourage this with you. I think home care nursing does not engage in enough research, and we certainly do enough of trial and error in home care. Well, we should be taking advantage of that. So that's my plug for research. Like I said, it'll give you an opportunity to obtain quantifiable data to prove the success of this strategy. And certainly you need to add the strategy to your best practicing monitoring tool to audit for staff compliance. Okay, and I just added for you, as always, the schedule for the intervention package is coming up. There are 8 remaining. And again, our iPro contact information. And then, of course, our state association contact information. And I do see we have some time for questions and comments. And I'm really anxious to hear from some of you and how this has worked or not worked for you. So, James, can we open the line up for some questions?
Yes, ma'am. As a reminder, the question and answer session will be conducted electronically today. If you would like to ask a question, please do so by pressing the star key followed by the digit 1 on your telephone. If you are using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Once again, to ask a question on today's presentation, please press star 1 on your telephone at this time. We'll pause for just one moment to allow your signal to reach our equipment.
Thanks, James. While we're waiting, just to talk more about Joanne Rogers' research. For the REACH agencies on the line, what Joanne had actually done is taken the New York Heart Classification of CHF, and it's classified by 1, 2, 3, or 4, actually used the OASIS data to correspond with that CHF classification to guide her clinicians on what interventions needed to be done for which class of CHF. Brilliant in many ways. This research was brilliant because it didn't really require that they get the classification verified by a physician. It used the symptomatology that was assessed by the clinician at the start of care on the OASIS MOO questions. Certainly, you know, we can go into more of that. But again, you know, this is the type of out-of-the-box thinking that we need in home care. Okay, is it perfect? No. But that's how research starts. You need a foundation to build on. And that's what this research has done. So I'm going to really encourage you to take a peek at some of those links I gave you to see if you can, you know, apply some of those strategies to your plan. James, do we have any questions in the queue?
No, ma'am. We have no questions in the queue at this time.
Okay, guys. Well, I have to tell you, it's always a pleasure. And certainly, you know, if you need the home care team, we'll be here for you. Certainly, any questions or concerns that you have about implementing the strategy, please call us, and we'd be happy to help you get this off the ground. Okay, James, and we're all set for today, and everyone have a wonderful day.
And it does conclude today's presentation. We thank you for joining, and have a wonderful day.